My name is Brian Pillman Jr., and you are listening to In Your Head with Shannon Standiford.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is In Your Head with Shannon Standiford, and I am so thankful for all of you who have stuck with me. It's been a weird, interesting year. We've had to kind of not produce as many episodes as we did last year. And I do apologize, but there was a lot of situations that kind of came up between the injuries that I suffered, the loss of my friend. I also just recently moved out of my old apartment that I'd been at for like 9-10 years, and moved back to one of my old hometowns. So kind of just getting used to the place and setting things up, and really just kind of try to find a new direction in my life. That's gonna be a whole other story. It's a whole other podcast in itself. But yeah, I ended up kind of losing my way a little bit. I let a lot of the darkness and self-doubt kind of just sink its claws into me, and it was starting to get a little bit dicey for me. I got called out a lot on the stuff that I was doing, and I had to take some time and really just kind of see where I was at. Fortunately, I'm starting to turn a corner. There's a lot of things in my life that I'm starting to change, and that's one of the things that I've told myself, that this year was going to be a year of change. Me moving was one change, and now I'm currently looking to start changing a lot of things in my life. My place of employment, the people that I have in my life. There's going to be a lot of changes this year, and I think it's definitely necessary. There's some sacrifices that I have to make, but in general, it's to not just better my life for my kids, but for me as well. Because at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to live my life, and so I need to be happy with it. And I haven't been happy in a while. So, I had to take, like I said in one of the last episodes, like I had to take a little bit of a break from all this, because as somebody that is an empath, I was starting to really feel like all the painful stories that was being told on here. I was starting to feel them, and I was living in a constant state of just misery. And while that makes for some compelling episodes, it was not making for some compelling life choices. So we're all changing, and the world is changing, the world is evolving, and we constantly have to evolve, and that's what I'm doing. But let's get on to the guest for this episode. Now, a while ago, I had mentioned how I had was in talks for an author to come on to the show, and then me and my guest Crystal Youngs had been conversating for about a year now, and I think that we've become pretty good friends. We talk almost daily. Very lovely woman. The story that she tells on this episode, it gets pretty raw, gets pretty deep, and I find that I think you'll all appreciate it and you'll see how much of a survivor this woman really is, and how hard of life she's had, and how and what she's overcame. It can what she's had to endure, it could have destroyed her, but she chose to stand up and keep going. So I think you'll fall in love with her the way that I did. She's a magnificent person and just a delight. And I think we shouldn't waste any more time, and let's just get to the episode. So here is Crystal Youngs. Absolutely, it pisses me off too. So, Crystal Youngs. Yes, I know. I don't know why. It just sounds weird. Like it's too plural.
It is plural. That's what I tell people.
So, welcome to the show. Thanks for agreeing to come on to the show oh so many months ago and finally getting around to doing it.
Yeah. Got some free time now.
Yes, you do have some free time. So, how are you t this evening?
I'm doing well.
Good,
How are you doing?
It's been a very long day. A lot of
Yeah,
driving
I bet.
on my end. I had some stuff that I had to do today. So, I had to go to Kansas City, and I hate Kansas City driving.
Same.
So I guess let's just start getting into it. What was Crystal's childhood like?
My childhood was very interesting. So I have a sister who is 3 years older than me, and she has a different father. And she was raised by my grandparents. She was there since she was a baby. And so when my mom got pregnant with me, they tried to set up a house for her and got her on food stamps and all that, to help her out, to keep her out of trouble, so she was able to raise me. And hold on, I got a pug that's driving me nuts. Sorry.
It's okay. He wants to be part of the show too.
Yeah, I gotta get my spray bottle. Okay, now I'm good. So my mom had me in May of 1987, and a few months prior to her having me, she lost her best friend. She died of cancer at a very young age after childbirth, and so my mom was grieving when I was born. And my dad was he was on drugs at the time, and so my mom knew she wasn't going to be able to raise me. Because she couldn't deal with her grief and have a small child at the same time. So she left me with a friend who my whole childhood I knew as the babysitter. My dad would go over there and hang out, and she raised me as her own until I was about 18 months old. And my grandpa, who had my sister, asked my mom, he saw her at a gas station, he said, "Where's my granddaughter and why haven't I seen her?" And so she finally gave up where I was. Well, Grandpa came and got me then too. So I was about 18 months and moving from home to home. And that was pretty interesting. So, but other than that, I mean, my childhood was great. I was spoiled rotten. My grandpa worked his butt off for us so we could have what we wanted, but he also taught us life lessons as well. So my mom or dad never got custody of me or my sister. My dad would try and try and try forever. He would even go to court when he was high, but he was just so dedicated to making sure that, I was okay and he was able to see me whenever he could. He never stopped trying for a relationship with me. And it wasn't until I got older that I actually had a decent relationship with both of them. So.
How did that go? Did they reach out to you or did you reach out to them?
I would reach out to them. My dad would always contact me. I think sometimes he felt like uncomfortable and didn't want to contact me when I was being kind of snarky with him still. But know, I go and hang out with my mom on weekends and go see my dad. And my dad was 11 years sober before he passed away in 2018. And I was so proud of him. He changed his whole life around. And, you know, he just touched so many lives through his sobriety, and it was very inspiring. So we had a lot of conversations about that, especially later on in his life and my life.
With him having the battle with addiction, is that something that, you know, like, you worry as far as, like, you and your sister worry, like, genetic? Oh, I'm sorry, anyway. Do you worry about that, having, like, any kind of genetic thing, not just with you growing up, but now that you have a child, do you have that worry, or is that just something that doesn't enter really your head?
I definitely have that worry. I know I've struggled with alcohol for several years, and, you know, that was my drug of choice, you could say. And, you know, Charlie is old enough now, you know, she knows what's going on and what I'm doing, and we talk about it, and, you know, she doesn't like it when I drink around her. And so, you know, I told her, hey, mommy doesn't have any stress at home anymore. Mommy doesn't have any stress at work. You know, I'm happy. I don't have a reason to numb my feelings anymore.
That's fair. So where does Crystal's life go once you've hit teenagehood?
I was a weird teenager. I listened to, like, ICP and Korn and Limp Bizkit, and I wore JNCO jeans.
That's that. For the younger people that listen to the show, that is literally facts. That's how almost everybody dressed back then.
In fact,
I think some people actually still kind of do.
Yeah. Trying to bring it back.
Yeah, I mean, if they're bringing in the mullet back, I'm pretty sure that these things are coming back next.
True. That is true.
So, anyway, go ahead. You're a weird teenager. What does Crystal do for fun whenever she's a teenager?
Well, I grew up in a small town. My high school years, Gilman City. It's population 300. I graduated with 8 in my class. It was definitely a different experience, you know, but it was nice because, you know, there weren't really enough of us in the class to, like, be too cliquey, because we had to like each other. But for the longest time, I was the only girl, and I got picked on really bad. But, you know, we would go to gravel roads and drink beer, and, you know, the cops would come by then and just have them dump out our kegs and, you know,
always
put us on our way.
The worst moment in life is whenever you had to dump that keg out.
I know.
Or you had to leave that beer behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many memories.
Those are the good old days when there was no social media.
Oh, yes. I've long said that, thank God, social media did not exist back then, because all of us would have been, well, the amount of stupidity and the amount of stupid things that we all did back then just for fun, not because we're, like, you know, we could put it on, like, Facebook, or this was pre-Jackass and stuff like that. Like, we literally just did stupid shit for fun.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sometimes mostly sober, so, you know, like, we couldn't honestly blame alcohol.
Yeah, exactly.
So
we would, like, ride bicycles off of the backs of trailers and
weird stuff. Jump out of, like, 2-3 story buildings just to see if you can grab a tree limb. That was me. Side note, I didn't. But never broke a bone, so, you know.
Nice.
So what was
dating like for you?
I had a high school sweetheart from another town. You know, it was your typical high school relationship. I don't remember how many years we were together, a few, but that was about it. I didn't really date a whole lot. Just small stuff here and there.
Okay. So did you, with the background that you had with, like your family and how weird that it was, did that have any kind of impact, on you at all whenever you were growing up, like mentally or like emotionally?
Yes, I was always confused, to what was going on. You know, I never knew. They just, you know, my grandparents told me, well, they're on drugs. Drugs are bad. So they're bad people. You know, and as I get older, no, it doesn't make them a bad person. You know, they're still human beings. They're just making bad choices. So they didn't really, you know, teach me much about any of the personal stuff like that and the real reason why we were with them.
Did it bother you that they didn't talk about it?
No. I don't think I really worried about it too much unless I had to go to court for some reason.
Looking back now, does it bother you?
No, because I think I had the best possible upbringing I could have had considering where everybody was at that time in their lives.
Okay, that's, you know, that's fair. I mean, you, things could have been worse, growing up. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that kind of could have had like, or you could have had similar childhoods to some people that didn't quite make it through very well. So, I mean, all things considered, yeah, I would say that you're pretty lucky. So where does Chad fall into? And then explain to the listeners that don't know you, who Chad is.
Chad is my husband. He passed away in 2016. We met actually in 2004 or 5. I was underage at the time and he was married. So, but he was always a funny guy. You know, he was always joking, always had a smile on his face. He was easy to get along with. Just a big jokester. And so he had gotten a divorce and, you know, I wasn't in a relationship at the time, and my sister and her husband at that time, you know, they're like, you should date Chad. And I'm like, no, he's old and he has a kid. You know, he's 9 years older than me. And, but I got to know him and I fell in love. We got together in 2007. We lived together shortly after that and we got married in 2010. And then in 2011, Charlie May came along.
So how would you describe your marriage to Chad?
We had a lot of fun. We were both pretty, I was introverted at one time. We were both pretty introverted and, you know, we like to just stay close to home and do things close to home. And, you know, we had our system of how we worked around, you know, household chores. And when Charlie came along, how we were going to do that. You know, we just worked so well together in different situations. I was in charge of the finances. And he always told me that I was tighter than bark on a tree. Because I always made him save.
It's not a bad theory, you know, like everybody needs that kind of person in their life. Otherwise you're paying like $400 for like an inflatable gorilla just to put it outside of your house once a year.
Right.
I don't know when, but like when you would do it, but you know, like whatever. Anyway, I digress. So would you say like, would you call him the love of your life?
Absolutely.
I figured you would. what I mean, other than, you know, like just like the chemistry you guys had obviously together, was it like, 'cause most couples, they, I mean, you know, we don't really talk about it, but everybody knows, it's not always rainbows and sunshine. So what were some of the worst parts about the marriage? I mean, I'm calling your marriage like horrible at by all means, but like we all know
Right.
that there are some parts of every marriage that just suck. So was there,
Exactly.
what was that part for you?
So Chad always said, no one knows what goes on behind closed doors. And he's so right. So when we got together, you know, we both like to drink. I wasn't even old enough to drink, but you know, we both like to drink. That was a commonality we had. And so eventually it got to where we were drinking more and more and more. And I got in a car wreck after drinking and driving one night and flipped my car. And after that, I told Chad, I said, I have to quit drinking. You know, I can't do this anymore. And so we quit for 2 years. That was March of 2008. We were sober until March of 2010 when we got married and decided we were mature enough to drink again. It makes me giggle now.
Okay.
But it was kind of funny the first time we went out booze cruising, after we started drinking again. We took out a six pack and we were both pretty tipsy off three. So sad.
There.
But again, you know, once we started in 2010, things just progressively got worse in that aspect. And you know, it caused a lot of issues between us and, you know, ultimately Chad's life.
Now I know how this story ends, and you know how the story ends. So I'm gonna give a warning to the people that are about to hear it for their first time. The events of this story is pretty triggering. And if this topic of suicide comes up that triggers you, this is probably not the episode for you, much less the show. So, you probably should stop listening to it now. If not, then we're gonna about to dig into it. So, Crystal, you did say his life, so, and I just did mention suicide, so this story does not end pretty. So why don't you tell us what, from the start of it to your in your eyes, to the conclusion, and I'll ask some questions afterwards because I don't want to interrupt.
Okay, here goes. So I'll start with, I think all of the weirdness in my life started at the beginning of 2016. You know, Chad had just received his lineman certification with the city that he worked for, and he was so excited. He got a nice raise, you know. We were celebrating by drinking. We were, you know, setting up retirement accounts. You know, we were planning our lives. I was going to switch my career and go back to teaching. And, but then Chad started. I know they say there's warning signs, but I never noticed until afterwards. But Chad became very angry, and he wasn't an angry person at all. You know, he was just short with everyone and very, very emotional, and I don't know. So the story starts, I'll just start on the day of. On February 27th, 2016, I was getting ready to do the polar plunge. I had a passion back then, and I did fundraising and helped out with Special Olympics, and so I did the polar plunge every year. I'd get a team together and we'd all dress up and jump in the freezing cold waters of Lake Viking. Always a good time. But when Chad was there with me, he got hit in the head. Some kid was throwing rocks and one hit him in the head. And he came unglued. I was like, Chad, it's okay. You're going to be all right. You know, and just never seen him so angry over something like that. So we came home and we started drinking, had some friends over, and then we had our county deputies over because we always grilled for them, you know, before their shift, before they went out to work. And so they were, two deputies were over. And then I get a message on my messenger that said, hey, are you going out tonight? If you do, I will. And Chad saw that and he's like, what does this mean? And I was like, I don't know. You know, he took it as this guy's like only coming out because I'm going to be there, which could have been the case. I don't know. But Chad was very upset. And then this guy makes a Facebook post about guys and girls being friends, not being able to be friends. And again, Chad came unglued because he knew it was directed at him. And we were fighting and I wanted to go out and he didn't want me to. And so, you know, just a drunken argument. And so Chad decided to leave. And he did that a lot. If he would get mad, he would take, you know, a 12 pack of beer and go out and booze cruise by himself and clear his head. You know, and he always came back. Well, the next morning he wasn't home. And I was like, okay, this is really weird, but maybe he's just somewhere cooling off. I tried not to think anything of it. I will note right here, Chad worked two suicide calls in one day, like 6 months prior. And one of the widows, she had three kids. I remember when Chad was telling me about it, I was like, oh my God, I can't even imagine how she feels right now. And, you know, Chad's like, oh, that's just the chicken shit way out. And so, you know, in my mind, no, Chad's not going to do that. So we cleaned the house. Charlie and I played. You know, she was asking all day, where's Daddy? Where's Daddy? And I just said he was at work because he worked all the time. And so then I was making biscuits and gravy. You know, I was leaving him voicemails, telling him to get home or I was going to eat his biscuits and gravy. And then I heard a knock at the door, and I was like, why is Chad knocking on the front door? That's stupid. And I go to the door, and there's our police chief and the pastor that married Chad and I standing at the door. And then I knew something wasn't good. And they told me, you know, Chad's been found in Clinton County, and he's deceased. And that's all I got. So I didn't know at that time what was going on. Of course, I'm breaking down. I'm going into shock. You know, so many emotions are taking over, and I'm bawling. Luckily, they called one of Chad's best friends, and him and his wife came over, and his wife helped with Charlie, and he helped me try to regain composure the best I could. Because there were people, you know, I think we had the whole sheriff's department at our house that night, people in and out, you know, people are whispering, and it was pissing me off. Stop whispering! You know, people going through my stuff, people trying to get Chad's stuff already. I mean, it was awful. Absolutely awful. You know, so the next day, I had to call my doctor. I was like, I need something that makes me sleep and that's going to help me with this pain because I can't handle this. And so she prescribed me a medication and, you know, it kind of made me a zombie for a while, but I think that's probably what I needed. So it took me a few days and I finally asked our sheriff, you know, what had happened. And he told me that Chad was shot in the mouth. And I was like, what? You know, I didn't know, like, what gun he used. I had no idea. I hadn't asked any questions because, quite frankly, I didn't even want to know at that point. And so I was like, that's weird, you know. So then, once we get the death certificate in, it says on there, undetermined as the manner of death. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? And even the funeral director was like, you've been here 25 years and I've never seen that on a death certificate. Like, of course, of course. So we find out the shot placement was about where his brainstem is, and it went up out the forehead, which is a very strange spot. But Chad was an EMT, and unfortunately, if he was, you know, going to do that, he knew how to. You know, you hate to say that, but so that caused a whole new line of confusion, because me and Chad's dad went down to the sheriff's office a few weeks after it happened, and they're like, well, this is a homicide investigation. I'm like, are you for real? You're telling me this is a homicide? My husband doesn't have an enemy in the world. I don't understand. You know, he's quizzing me about all my phone calls and phone records, and I'm like, okay, well, do you have a suspect? Like, you know, who do you think did this? Oh, we don't know. We don't have any leads. He gave me a cell phone number. Ugh. Every time I see this deputy to this day, I'm like, oh, I can't stand you. Because I would call him, and I'd be like, okay, you know, I kind of like to know what happened to my husband. Do you have any leads yet? Nope, nothing new. Nope, nothing new. So then I finally call the sheriff at the time down there, and he's telling me it's a suicide. And I'm like, what in the world kind of law enforcement is this? Like, what's going on here? Can someone please just give me a straight answer? Yeah. And so during that time, there were so many rumors coming out, you know, I hired a hitman, I murdered him, you know, and of course, if somebody dies by suicide, it's always the wife's fault because they were cheating. Always, every single suicide, somebody says that. Well, their wife must have been cheating, you know. It's like, do you not believe in mental illness? Because that's what causes suicide. Not a cheating wife or a cheating girlfriend. Facts. Oh, but people are so uneducated. They don't know, you know, about mental illness. You know, I sure didn't. I had no idea what to look for. And that's... it's one of the reasons I don't like the term suicide prevention, because for me as a suicide survivor, you know, I didn't prevent his death, and so it makes me feel guilty. So I prefer the term suicide awareness over suicide prevention. I don't know where to go from here.
Okay. No, that's fine. So... just let's speak about the, like, the rumors, because you know, you're right. The few people in my life that have gone the suicide route, you always do hear people talking, because people just, you're right, cannot comprehend that this person, there was something wrong. And it bothers me a lot whenever people tell or say that, you know, like, we'll make excuses. There is no excuse. There was something wrong.
Yeah.
And instead of understanding that he or she could talk about it, they just decided to do it alone, and they made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, once that choice is made, that makes everybody's life around each other so much worse, because yes, now you have people who cannot comprehend that somebody would not want to be here with them. So naturally they have to point the finger at somebody else. And in this case, they pointed it at you. Now,
right at me.
Right at you. So let's just get right to it. I'm going to ask you a series of questions and, just answer. Okay?
Okay.
Did you ever cheat on Chad?
Yes.
Okay. Before?
But it was several years before 2016.
Okay. So that answers the next question of how far out was the affair, but okay, there you go. Did that person How did that relationship end? Did Chad find out, or?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, all right. So, was that whole situation squashed and not brought up again, or was there issues?
He had me, you know, block him on everything, so okay. There weren't any issues there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you knew I was going to ask hard questions, so. Okay. Did you, at any point, want to kill your husband?
No.
Okay. Now, I say that because there's always hesitancy, because we all have that one part in our relationship where, like, they leave, like, the door open or a drawer open or forget to buy toilet paper, and you're like, oh, I could kill this person. That is not what I'm talking about, but right. She knew. So, okay. You didn't want to kill him. Could you afford to hire a hitman?
Not at that time.
Okay, see? Hitmans, hit people do not work cheap.
I don't know what they're up to these days.
I mean, you never know. I mean, the mob is always listening.
I know.
Anyway, so you had no desire to kill your husband?
No.
Okay. So when these rumors came out and people started talking and you hear them for the first time, how does that make you feel?
I was very hurt. Number one, because who was just sitting around, you know, thinking, she's probably not miserable enough. I'll just start a rumor that a hitman was hired. And then it spread like wildfire. At that time, I was still very vulnerable and emotional, and anything that anybody said just killed me on the inside.
Yeah, that'll do it. So you're going through that. So you're having to listen to all these rumors, and you're just absolutely devastated. Your husband just committed suicide. Where is your head? What did a typical day, like right after your husband died, what was the typical day for you?
I don't remember.
For me,
a lot of it out.
I'm say for me, I remember like whenever Rachel died, I remember the day, and I remember leading up to the funeral. But any time after that, I blocked a lot of it out because it was just a lot. It was just too real, mm-hmm. And like the numbness was starting to really just take a hold. So was that so? Like right after, do you remember the funeral?
Barely. I don't remember, like, who the pallbearers were or, you know, what was said or who was there or anything.
Do you have any resentment towards your husband for taking his life?
I do. We bounce back and forth through those stages of grief, you know, mm-hmm. And I get really angry at him some days for leaving me, you know, to do this disaster myself.
How much of your life since he has died do you find yourself kind of reliving the emotions, much less the day in your head?
I don't as much anymore.
How long, did you?
For quite a while. I always got some pretty weird flashbacks, especially after I saw, I mean, I didn't see him, but I saw his body laying there, and, you know, I'm glad I didn't see him, because that's just a vision that you'll never forget. I know a lot of suicide widows who actually watched their husband do it, and so some major PTSD right there.
Yeah, that definitely had to be. After he died, and now you have to live this life where your husband is gone. You have a very, very young daughter at that time, right? Because how old was Charlie?
She was 4.
Okay, so you have a 4-year-old daughter. Your husband just died. You have obviously no idea what you're doing with life right now, because nothing makes sense. What if any moment in your life at that point did you think to yourself, I have to do this now? Like, what was your, like, click of the, like, flip the switch, like, I have to live life again?
I would say, I mean, I had to make some pretty quick decisions because Charlie was just getting ready to start kindergarten, and her older brother was getting ready to graduate high school. But, I mean, I didn't want her to go to school where we lived. You know, I just wanted to be out of there. That was his town. No, it's not my town. I was there for him. You know, so I decided just a few months after, hey, we're moving to Cameron. And I had good enough credit. I was able to buy my first home and, you know, told Charlie, let's do this. it was hard being in my house, you know, because that was our home and our memories, and I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think one of the things with after Rachel died, I think I was so quick to move out of the apartment that I had lived in whenever me and her were dating, that even to this day, if I like drive by the building, it sends kind of like a shockwave of like remembrance and and depression and all that stuff. So did you have a battle with depression after he died?
Yes. I had postpartum after Charlie. I was on antidepressants after that, and that was one of the ways that I knew Chad was depressed, because I caught him taking my medication, and I told him, you know, Chad, you should probably go to the doctor. I mean, no shame in being on medication if you need the help. And he said, I'm in the public eye. I don't want people to think I'm crazy. So you calling me crazy?
No
but
comment.
He refused to go. He refused to go. You know, and that's so sad. That's the stigma that surrounds mental health. You know, you got to be strong. You got to be a man.
Yeah.
I don't
agree with that. Yeah. I don't like that. I don't like that stigma. I've long fought it. Not just depression, but like the stigma itself. And even someone that's now in somewhat of a public eye, it is, I don't hide it. And I don't think you should. Did you hide yours afterwards?
I had to, well, I never had anxiety until this happened, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
The worst thing possible just happened to me.
And you're just like, it's like you just literally became like a different version of yourself with all the defects.
Yeah. Yeah, I really believe, you know, once your spouse passes away, I mean, in a way, you kind of have to die yourself, because you're not going to be the same person ever again. They say after becoming widowed, and I can vouch that this is true, you lose about 75% of your circle. And, you know, after Chad died, I lost a whole lot of people in my circle. But, you know, it bothered me at first again. You know, I was very emotional. But now I realize, you know, they're gone for a reason. They're not in my life for a reason right now. And that's okay.
Right. So when did you start thinking about dating again after he died?
Well, I could have taken a date to the funeral and that would have been just fine, but apparently people frown upon
You
that.
know, I never quite understood that. It's a social event. I feel like you can't go by yourself.
Kind of brings me to the dark humor part of things.
Yes. Okay.
I'll
So
get
let's talk about that, because a lot of people don't understand. And I'm one of the, and that's one of the things that me and you actually talk like bonded over whenever we first got to talking, is that whenever you lose someone that is like the love of your life, whether it's your girlfriend, your wife, husband, boyfriend, dog, I don't know, whatever it is people are into these days, you lose the ability to give a fuck about really anything,
Yes.
because you've lost the main part of yourself, so you might as well just enjoy the darkness that surrounds you. So
Yes.
but a lot of people, especially older people, they don't get it. So how much of the people that surrounded your life did not get it?
Quite a few, quite a few. I've made a few enemies from it because, you know, they think it's disrespectful to the dead, and you know, it's not. It's not, you know, our lives suck. You know, and more than likely the people that are judging us haven't lost a spouse. So they have no idea. You know, and we use humor in a way to cheer us up. You know, we joke about dead people. We joke about dead things and skeletons and you know, that's just what we do. You know, and of course there are some widows and widowers who don't and still, you know, they think it's offensive, but I think it's more of us, you know, the younger generation of widowed folk that really understand. Especially, you know, with social media, it's so easy. I didn't really know any widows until about 2018, and I got online and I ordered this book called Boys, Booze, and Bathroom Floors. And it was written by a woman named Michelle Miller, who I've actually met a few times and we're pretty good friends. But this book was about her Tinder dates and everybody that she had sex with, you know, because that's how she dealt with her grief, was sex. And she just put it out there, you know, and I told her, I read this book and I was like, damn, I don't feel bad at all. She's like, that was the purpose of the book. You know, I love reading, you know, and I read a lot of books after he passed, but it was all that, you know, chummy, well, go meditate, go to church, do this, do that. You know, that's not what I want to hear. I want to hear the real stories, the real stuff that people have been through that, you know, lost their spouse to suicide or any other way. You know, we want to hear the real stuff. You know, and I learned, you know, you have to grieve your own way. We all have to grieve our own way. And if people don't understand that, then they should be happy they don't understand that.
Oh yeah, I think I think me and you've had this conversation where it's one of those things where no one really understands what you go through, and they all have their theories on how you should grieve until it happens to them, and you never actually ever want anybody else to go through the pain that you've gone through.
Right.
But it is one of those annoying things where people will constantly tell you, oh, you should just move on. Like, it's been X amount of years, or, you know, like whatever. It's time for you to move on. You know, like, they would want you to move on. How much of that do you get?
A lot. You know, even the funeral director, like we were talking about the headstone, you know, I don't want to make these decisions at all. But he's like, you're young, you'll remarry. And I'm like, what? That's ageism. Don't say that to me. But, you know, I mean, I got talked about for dating, for not dating, for who I dated, you know, it was never the right person. obviously. So we'll get into that dating thing again.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really, like, dated, you know? I just kind of, you know, knew people, and, you know, that's how Chad and I met. And so it had been almost 10 years since I'd been a single woman, and that's scary.
Yeah, I'm sure
it's
very
scary. So I've dealt with abandonment issues, obviously, my whole life, being left by my mom, dad, and being left by Chad, and then, you know, it kind of gets to your self-worth and self-esteem, and, you know, you don't feel loved. I didn't have any intention on being in a relationship. I think what I was just looking for at the time was just fun. And Chad always told me about his ex-wife, you know, that there's always going to be that one guy that comes up and says all the right things, and that's the guy you want to avoid, because that's what happened with his ex-wife. And so I knew this, and I could hear him, you know, telling me, you know, don't do it, but I did it anyway. And honestly, at the time, I just wanted someone that I could fix and someone that would be obsessed with me so I would feel loved. I mean, honestly, that's the only thoughts I really had in my brain at that time. You know, there was no rational thinking at all. It was all strictly from emotion. So I did make some really bad choices of men in the last 5.5 years. You know, I got broken up with because I was too sad once. Oh, I broke up with a guy and he threatened suicide, you know, because that's what I want to hear.
Right.
You know, just a mess of things. I went on online dating one time back in 2018, and I was on Plenty of Fish, and one, either guys were sending me creepy messages like, I'm jealous that your heart is beating inside of you and not me, or I would get like guys that I knew that were like, why are you on here? It's a bunch of creeps on here. And I'm like, oh, so you're a creep?
It's the most appropriate response right there.
Nothing ever came of that. I just got out of a pretty long relationship, but I mean, it was for the best. I have, you know, my life back. I have low stress, and you know, things are really good right now. I have lost 60 pounds since January this year.
Congratulations. But one would say that's... you've lost way more than that with the breakup. But I digress.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, for once in my life, I feel like, you know, there's hope again. Like, I'm going to be okay. I feel good about myself. I have confidence. You know, I can do whatever I want now. I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't have to be drugged down by anybody. And I'm just so excited to start this chapter in Charlie and I's lives and see where it takes us. You know, healing is so hard. And I've been stuck for so long. Just, you know, it's hard to explain. You want to numb your feelings. You don't want to feel them. And then when you have to feel them, it sucks, and you don't like that either. But I've really learned, you know, last year was pretty much my rock bottom. I lost my grandpa, and that just sucked. I mean, he was my dude. And after that, I just kind of gave up and said, you know what? I don't have to be healthy. I don't have a reason to live. And I just started eating and drinking everything. You know, so many toxic things and people were in my life at that time. And I was super depressed. And I had a gallbladder attack at the beginning of the year and had to have surgery. You know, I hadn't weighed myself in forever because I knew I was just a fat ass and I was uncomfortable. And so I was at the hospital and I got on the scale and I was like, holy crap, Crystal, what have you done to yourself? I was disgusted. And so at that point, I knew I have to do something to make my life better, or I'm just going to keep being miserable. And, you know, in the widowed community, a lot of us deal with the same issues after losing a spouse, and weight loss is a big one. So I connected with one of my friends who had lost weight, and I started the program he did, and it's just changed my whole way of eating and, you know, being healthy. And it feels great. I have energy for days now. It's awesome. I feel like I'm in high school again.
So, before we continue, we're going to take a quick break. So just hang with us.
What's up, guys? In Your Head with Shannon Stafford is a podcast where Shannon talks to everyday people with everyday problems. Everyone has a story, and every story should be told. So you listen right now to Shannon's podcast on Spotify and many other places, y'all. Come on, man. Be the light. Peace.
So we're back from break. I hope everyone enjoyed their brief 30 seconds of breaking. For us, it was like 10 minutes. So... Anyway, so let's get back to it. How has Charlie taken all this?
She was, like I said, four, almost five when he passed away. Took me a few days. I didn't know how to tell her. I mean, how do you tell your daughter that her father's gone forever? That was the hardest thing I have ever had to do in my life. But I looked at her and I said, Charlie, Daddy has become an angel and went to heaven, and, you know, we're not going to be able to see him anymore. And she said, oh my gosh, Mommy, I'm so sorry. I'll take care of you. Aww. And it just broke my heart. I was like, oh my gosh. You know, I remember I was so scared to be a mom. You know, I was so glad that Chad had some experience because he has an older son, and, you know, he knew what he was doing because I had no idea. I made Chad stay with me for 2 weeks after she was born, and then his mom stayed with me for another 2 weeks because I was so scared. So, of course, now I'm scared because I'm like, I have to do this alone. You know, I don't have anybody to argue with about how we're going to raise our daughter. It's just me. But she, you know, we've always been a team. We've always worked so well together. If there's an issue or a problem, we talk about it. This year was her first year, like, having any issues at school with drama. You know, and she was 100% honest with me with exactly what happened. And I'm so happy because that's what I wanted with her, you know, for us to be close to where we can tell each other what's on our mind and if something's bothering us, you know, talk about it. But she is very mature for her age, and I mean, it's a good thing and a bad thing, you know, because she's been through so much, and we were both forced to grow up together, when we didn't want to, and she's handled it very well. She's very empathetic. She's very caring. She has so many good qualities that I'm jealous, you know, that I don't even have today. She did a talent show at school. I'm like, oh my God, I would never have done that when I was in fourth grade. But she's so happy. She's full of life. She's hilarious. You know, her sense of humor it gets me. But, you know, she's definitely been my lifesaver through the whole thing. And, you know, she's seen me break down and cry. And she's seen the worst of me that other people haven't. And, you know, of course, we, at the very beginning, it was very tough, because I was crying all the time and, you know, always upset, sad. And, you know, I had to teach her it's okay to show our emotions. If we're sad, we can cry. There's no sense in hiding it. And in the grief journey, I think, you know, the longer you go, it doesn't get better. It doesn't get easier. You know, all that old crap that people say. You know, we just learn to deal with it differently. We learn, you know, I get triggered all the time, you know, fire trucks, ambulances, linemen, you know, I'm always triggered by something. And, you know, instead of being on the floor in the fetal position, you know, I can now just kind of deal with it as it comes, and I'm going to be okay. You know, I'll try to think of a good memory of Chad and do it that way. So that's helped. And, you know, we talk about her dad a lot. You know, she knew he was at work, and she's asked what suicide was. And so I told her the Webster dictionary definition, and she's like, I still don't know what that means. I'll ask you in a few years. Okay. So she doesn't really know what happened yet, and, you know, she'll ask me when she's ready.
I've been a part of a few of those conversations. Somebody asked me what suicide was, a little kid, and I had looked at their parents, and I was like, why?
Yes.
So I was like, okay, well, so that's when you unalive yourself. And, like, for whatever reason, that was, like, not the best thing you could ever tell a child. Do not, repeat, do not tell a child that someone unalived themselves, because it is a thought, it's a thought provoker. And then whenever they finally get it, it's not pretty. It is really not pretty. So don't do that. I'm a horrible person whenever it comes to asking somebody, what the definition of something is, because in my demented mind, I think that they want the actual truth.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. Speaking of Charlie and asking things, this is off topic, but has she asked you where babies come from yet?
I tried to tell her Amazon for the longest time, and I think she believed me for a while, but she's getting smarter now, and I think she knows. I think the last thing she thought was that women took a pill when they got married and fell in love and then they had a baby.
When
in reality, we take pills not to have babies.
Say, yeah. Have you, during that whole period of just being utterly destroyed and having the depression and, like, now anxiety and PTSD, had suicide ever entered your brain?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
What stops you?
Number one, you know, I mean, it's always, you have to think about what you're going to do. That's uncomfortable. You know, I don't like guns. I don't have guns in this house because I don't like guns and I don't trust myself. But that's scary. You know, there was one time, it was after Chad's dad had passed away, shortly after he did. And I was, you know, all the memories of his funeral were brought up because he was buried right next to him and it was the same funeral home. And, you know, so it was just like reliving it. And I was laying on the floor just, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And I had like a single picture of Charlie up on my end table and it flew off and landed next to me on the floor. And I was like, I got to get up. I got to do this. You know, I have to be strong for her. You know, if I do that, what do we think she's going to do when she gets older? You know, that's teaching her we can't deal with our problems, you know, so we're just going to take care of it ourselves. And I don't want her to think that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hold on. Did you say the picture flew off and landed next to you?
Yeah. I had the fan on. So oh, okay. It was just like a single picture. It wasn't in a frame or anything.
Okay. Still, whatever, you can draw your own conclusion about it, but that's oddly weird how that worked. It's almost, one could say, very prophetic, you know, just, you know, throwing that out there. So you wrote a book about all this.
I did.
Okay. So what is the name of your book?
It is called Suicide Widow, My Life Story of Persevering Through Adversity, Addiction, and Abandonment.
Now, I had you say that because I have your book, because you gave it to me. But I have zero, since I've moved, I have zero idea where I put anything as far as, like, my books went. So I couldn't remember the name of it, so that's why I had you say it. Not that I'm unprepared, it's just that for this moment I was a little unprepared and my memory sucks.
Yeah, that comes with age, I know.
Ah, shut up.
So, where
does the idea of writing the book come into play?
Okay, so things have evolved on the internet and social media. You know, I've had Facebook since 2005, when you had to be a college student and have a college email to be on it, you know, and back then I would post stuff like, oh, just ate supper, you know, just took a nap. It was like, woo, it was so exciting. But I started, it was a few years after Chad had passed away, but I started like writing out my feelings and making posts about, you know, how I felt. And you know, people would reach out to me and, you know, say, thank you for sharing your story. It's helped me so much. And, you know, at that point I had quite a few widow friends and quite a few of them had written books themselves. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do that. So I decided, I was going to write this book. It was going to be called From Orphan to Widow. And when I talked to my dad about it, he got mad at me and he said, you changed the name of that book. You were never an orphan. I was always there trying to be there for you. I was like, all right, I'll change it. So it was pretty cool that I got a lot of information from him before he passed away. And that helped a lot. So I just started writing it out on a Word document. I had a few friends that helped me out with kind of the how I should lay it all out. The book starts with the day of and what happened. Let me pull up my chapters here. And then Chad's brother, he wrote chapter 2. And then I go into my childhood and when I met Chad and... then I talk about, the blame game, that one's good, and identity crisis, because, like I said, I mean, you lose yourself after you lose your partner. You just lost your whole life. I mean, I wish married people would think about this, like estate planning. Get your life together, because you could leave one hell of a mess for your spouse to deal with if something happens to you. There's this one comedian at Camp Widow. We should address that later also. But she was talking about, like, when we have to call these companies to get the name changed and everything settled. And, you know, you'll call them and you'll tell them, well, so-and-so's deceased. You know, I need to get this in my name. Well, ma'am, you're not on the account. We're going to have to talk to Mr. So-and-so to be able to listen to you. And it's like, I just told you he was dead. Like, what do you want from me? I don't know how these customer service places are trained, but it's ridiculous and it's a nightmare, quite frankly. You know, I have everything. I have a book called I'm Dead, Now What? So all you have to do is open that up and it has everything in it. Everybody should have that because people fight and people get greedy and ugly and nasty and it's horrible. I would suggest everybody get their stuff in order. But anyways, back to the book. So I started putting it all together, and it was very therapeutic for me. I think my purpose for writing it was because no one heard my story. No one heard the real story. There were so many other stories going around what other people thought, and I wanted the truth out there. You know, mental illness is real. people that look happy all the time, you know, can kill themselves. You know, we never know. We never know. And I knew the haters would read it. So I was like, all right, I'll just put it all out there. And I had, of course, people, oh, I guess anybody can publish a book on Amazon these days. Yeah, if you're smart enough, you really can. It's pretty easy, actually. But I was pretty bitter back then. I think you can kind of tell from the tone of the book.
I was going to say, because, like, whenever I read it, I read a lot of bitterness into it, and I just assumed that it was maybe just the bitterness in me reading it, but it's good to know that it was actually there.
Yes, I was very bitter back then. One thing about your life turning to shit, you really stop caring about what people think of you. And that's a huge success in life, because you feel so much better when you don't give a damn what other people think of you. You know, I am who I am. I'm an open book. You want to know something, I'll tell you. You know, but nobody asks. Everybody just assumes. So I published the book in May of 2018. Made it in a few newspapers, so that was pretty cool. But it's been, 3 years now since I published that one, so I think it's time to start a new one.
Okay, so speaking of that, are you planning on writing a follow-up?
I am.
Okay, so we talked about this and how you wanted to announce this on the show, so... at least announce the name. So what is the future book going to be called?
No One Heard Me Scream.
Ooh, I like that. Ooh. I'm intrigued right now.
It stems from a domestic violence situation I was involved with after Chad passed away, where... you know, I was choked out and trying to get away, and it was the middle of December, and it was freezing outside, and I was just outside of my car just screaming, help me, you know, and no one heard me, no one came, and I got to thinking about it one day. I'm like, damn, I've spent my whole life for the last few years, like, I've been screaming out for help, but I haven't been getting any help. You know, I need support, too. I can't do this all myself. And so I think that's the way I want to go with it. And just kind of discuss some of the other things I have been through and dealt with, and, you know, just to inspire other people. And, you know, it's always good. You hear from people who are, like, newly widowed. I mean, it does get different, you know, the more years that pass, and you feel differently and think differently. And, you know, like I said, I had to rebuild my whole life again, my whole personality, my whole everything. And so it's been a pain in the ass, but it's also kind of empowering now, because I can actually be me. I can find out who the real Crystal Youngs is. And, you know, I can't wait. I can't wait for the future to see what it holds.
Absolutely. One more thing about the books. After your book came out, what kind of, if any, backlash was there? Because, you know, I had to know people may not have been very happy with the actual truth coming out because it didn't fit their narrative. So how many people had an issue with your book?
I heard more good than bad. You know, of course, I got some good Amazon reviews. One story I do want to share from my book, being out, there was this one gal who had contacted me. She bought my book. She lives around here. She bought my book, read it, and we were talking about, you know, the similarities, you know, but she hadn't lost anyone or her fiance or anything. I mean, it was like the next day or the day after that, her fiance died in a motorcycle accident. And, you know, she was devastated. And I was like, I'm right here for you, girl. I've been through it too, and it sucks. So, you know, I've made very good friendships from, you know, what's happened. And, I mean, that's, you know, one of the only good things that's really come out of it.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I hate saying this, I think whenever you lose a partner, whether, like I said, whether it's your husband, wife, fiance, boyfriend, or girlfriend, and no matter how it is that you've lost them, I think that there's a part of you that after you've lost them, that you go through, like you said, you go through a little bit of an identity crisis, and you kind of try to, and once you start trying to figure out who you are, you do find yourself drawn to people that understand the pain, that understand the darkness that, you know, that you go through. And I have found that as close as I am to the people of my friends that I had before Rachel had died, I think the people that I've met since, like, starting this show and just being more open about Rachel's death, I've learned that, like, I've gotten closer to people that understand what it is to lose everything that you've ever wanted in your life. You lose the love of your life. I think, to me, those relationships, I think, in a sense, mean a little bit more, because these people, these new people that have lost somewhat of the same thing that you've lost, they understand you a lot better than the people that never have lost somebody. So you saying that those, like, people coming to you, I've seen that on social media. I've seen you reach out, and I've seen a lot of the people gravitate towards you, because as someone that is more vocal about that, because it took me a very long time to be vocal about Rachel. Is it easy for you to talk about all this, or is this just something that's kind of like brand new, as far as like the confidence to do it?
I think it's, it's just been built over the last few years. You know, it took a lot for me to put my book out, because, you know, a lot of people told me, you know, there's going to be backlash for it. People are going to be mad, you know. I didn't mention any names of anyone who didn't give me permission. But I don't know. It was therapeutic, and that was my way of dealing with it. And I enjoy writing, and I think a lot of good things have happened since the last book. And, you know, I'm excited to talk about the more positive things in life instead of, you know, just being brought down by so much depression and, you know, not being able to deal with it.
Okay. So speaking of that, so instead of being weighed down by the darkness that you've gone through, you are part of something that, like you said earlier in the interview, you like to, spread awareness. So you're part of a walk. So why don't we talk about that? So, how does that start up?
So last year, you know, it was a dumpster fire for everyone. Right after I lost, you know, my grandpa passed away, I was like, I have to have something that will keep my mind occupied. And I'd been looking at doing an Out of the Darkness walk, which is put on by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So I reached out to our regional person and I said, hey, what does it take for us to do a walk? I want to do one in Cameron. And, you know, all it took was a social media post, and I had people wanting to help and be a part of it. And, you know, we really did just kind of wing it last year, but it turned out awesome. You know, we raised quite a bit of money. You know, I just love that people have a passion for this and people care. And, you know, all of us that have been through losing someone to suicide, we can be there for each other, because it's a loss like no other. I mean, there's so many questions and why, you know, I know I'm never going to know why, but it still just drives you crazy, especially if you have OCD like me.
Yeah. I remember the walk last year. I promoted it. And I was, the sad thing was, the day of the walk last year, I was all set to go. And then I found out my son got COVID, so I couldn't. So I was highly upset because some Chinese virus prevented me from doing that. So, when is this year's walk?
This year's walk is September 19th. It's going to be on a Sunday this year because Bethany is doing one that Saturday. So I think it'll be nice. It's at the same place, at the football field here in Cameron. So we've been preparing, we've been working, and we're trying to work out the kinks and things that we didn't like about last year and try to change it up and just make it better this year. I'm excited. You know, and everybody's like, oh, you just do all this for attention, and you just want attention because you're a widow. It's like, you know, I didn't even want to be in the newspaper. I didn't want anything to do with it. You know, I just put it on for other people so it will help other people. It has nothing to do with me. It's, you know, just my heart helping other people's hearts.
That does bother me a lot, is whenever people are trying to do, like, good things for other people. There's always somebody out there saying that you're doing it for attention.
Always.
I kind of got to the point where I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I'm doing. I want attention on something that I'm doing to help other people get attention.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing. Yep, you nailed it. Yeah. So, because God forbid we talk about suicide, because, you know, it is it's that taboo thing that a lot of people don't like to talk about.
It makes people uncomfortable.
It does make people uncomfortable. Do people get uncomfortable around you if it gets brought up? Like, if they're not even talking about Chad, somebody says, hey, I'm going to go kill myself. Do people just be like, oh, shit, Crystal's right here?
Not really. I know I have this another widowed friend. She didn't like me in high school. And, you know, I reached out to her. I used to date her brother in high school. But reached out to her, and I was like, you know, I know you don't like me, but we've kind of been through the same thing. So I'm here for you if you want to talk. And, you know, I just keep on her. You know, I'll just send her random messages. How you doing? How you doing? You know, just so she knows someone's there and checking up on her and cares. You know, because that's all we need. We don't need people to fix us. We don't need people to think they're going to be the hero and come in and save the day. There's nothing to save. You know, we have to find ourselves. We have to figure out who we are for ourselves. And that's what's important.
That is very true. So I guess one of my last questions, because there's two other things that I end my interview with, but my last question, through all this, through Chad's suicide, through the very interesting childhood, the quick burst into alcoholism, the shitty fucking dating circumstances that you found yourself in, throughout all of this, who's Crystal? Who's Crystal beyond the mom, beyond the widow, beyond the friend, the coworker? Who's Crystal?
I think, you know, I've gained several qualities that I never had before. You know, I never in my life imagined I would find a bunch of random strangers that were widowed on the internet and fly all the way across the country to meet them, but that's what I do. I've made lasting friendships, you know. There's several widows I talk to every day, you know, just to keep up with each other, just to let them know someone cares and is there for them. You know, like I said, I've lost 60 pounds. That's awesome. You know, I'm so down on myself. I, you know, I can't do this. I would make excuses for myself. Well, Chad's not here, and the last time I lost a lot of weight, Chad was there to support me, and now I don't have support, so I can't lose weight. And then I was like, after I had my fatty gallbladder removed, I was like, all right, Crystal, you got this. You can do this. And it's hard to lose weight, but if you're consistent and don't eat sugar, you'll lose weight. It's that easy. But I do. I feel amazing. You know, I just feel like there's so much potential for me. And I'm, you know, I've joined organizations this year. You know, I joined the Optimist Club here in town and signed up for the park board. You know, I'm trying to broaden my horizons and get involved with stuff. And of course, Charlie has dance and all sorts of stuff going on too, so it makes for a busy life, but we like it. We like our little life and, you know, what we have. And of course, we're in the middle of a remodel right now, and it's looking fantastic.
Yes, it is. I enjoy the progress pictures that you send.
So I think that's the biggest thing, is I have confidence now, and I haven't had that for so long, probably since 2015. You know, everybody's like, oh my God, you look amazing. It's like, well, this is what I normally look like. I just got fat because of Chad dying and me eating and drinking everything in sight.
So, I mean, there's that.
I'll try to gain some weight.
So, what do you appreciate the most about life right now?
I'm very thankful because I have a very nice home. I have a very good job, and I have a very awesome daughter. I mean, everything is, I say this and something traumatic is going to happen, but everything's finally going the way that it should in my life, and that makes me happy. And it's, you know, I'm kind of like that one song on the radio. I ain't happy yet, but I'm not that sad. You know, kind of where I'm at in life.
That's good. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and telling your story. And I feel like there's probably some stuff that we didn't bring up, which is great, because there's this thing about the show called like an open door policy, so you can come on it whenever and however many times you want, because I enjoy people coming on the show and talking about the things that they've gone through, because this show has this ability to reach so far, last to my knowledge, we are 26 and we've been listened to in 26 different countries. So in those 26 countries, there's someone out there that has gone through something similar to what you've gone through. And for you to be able to come on the show and tell the story of being a widow and how you've somewhat overcome the beast of it, it gives other people out there hope. And exactly. I want to thank you for doing that, because it takes a special kind of person to want to come on to a show that is aired in 26 different countries, and very little editing is involved, so it takes someone really brave. And like, I remember sending you a few messages randomly telling you just how brave of a person I think that you are. And since I have you on here, and this is such a public forum, and it's my fucking show, I get to do this publicly instead of privately. I've always, the entire time that we've known each other and talked, and the more I've gotten to know you, I've seen the bravery, and I've seen the darkness that you've gone through, and I know how hard life has hit you pretty well. But you have always been able to, at some point, just say, "Fuck this! I'm not. This isn't happening. It's not winning today." And you've gotten up, and you keep fighting, and you not just for yourself, but for your daughter and for all those people out there that may not even ever really get a chance to tell you how much you are their light. And to me, that is like the greatest thing about you, is that you're a light that you don't even know how bright you're shining, because there's so many people out there that your story has probably saved them. And for that, like, thank you, because the small part of your life that I am, your presence in mine has actually changed it quite a bit. So thank you for that, and thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me very much.
All right.
Now, I don't know about you, but I learned a lot about Crystal. And to be honest, I learned a lot about the human spirit and the perseverance that one can have. You know, they always say that when people go through what Crystal did, you know, they're always talking about how marvelous that person's strength is. But after a while, you kind of get a little tired of hearing how strong you are, because eventually you get to the point where you're like, hey, I'd very much like not to have to be strong. And I think she's getting to that point where it's not just about knowing that she can be strong. It's the fact that she doesn't have to be strong every day. She lives for the day. She lives for her daughter and, you know, her husband's memory. And, you know, you can tell she still very much loves him. But right now she's learning to love herself and loving the life that she has now. So I'm very proud of her. And like I said at the very end of the episode, I'm super happy that she and I collided or connected in this part of our life's journey. And as long as we're in each other's books, you know, I think I'll always be there to support her. She's, you know, she's become a friend of mine and one of a very important part of my life. So I'm super thrilled with that. It was so nice to be able to sit down and record an episode with somebody. And I anticipate trying to get more done, but for the meantime, I want to thank all of you. Certain parts of my life haven't always been great. You know, like having mental health issues it's not fun, and it's not fun when people try to use that against you. To me, it makes them look sad to use somebody who is openly talking about the struggle that they have, and, you know, and trying to constantly change and push for not just acceptance but awareness. And that's all that we are all trying to do, because at the end of the day, we don't know what the other person's going through. We don't know what the other person's thinking, and what you say could be the last thing that they hear. And in that light, the last thing you say to a person you don't know. It could be the thing that pushes him over the edge, could be the thing that pulls him back. So always be kind. I think it's really important. And always keep fighting. Like, so many statements, you know, like you hear from celebrities and personalities over, like, you know, always be kind. Always keep fighting. You're not allowed to quit. The things that I've learned throughout time on social media is that there are some horrible people out there, but there's also some really good people, and those good, really good people are the ones that are constantly reaching out to make sure that others are okay. So if you know somebody that you think is not acting the way that they should be or starting to withdraw, and maybe you should check on them. You know, because while you could be wrong, there's a 10% chance that you could be right. And that's 10% chance that you could be saving a life. Because what you do in life echoes in eternity. And if I learned anything in this life, is that you should always, always try to help somebody if you can. That's what I teach my kids. You know, if you can, help somebody. My best friends, my brothers, they're always there for me whenever I start getting out there. You know, I start disappearing. You know, they're always very quick to pull me back in. So I want to thank everybody for that. So yeah, I think this was a good episode. I want to thank everybody for rejoining me and coming back and listening to this episode. And until the next one. But before I go, I appreciate you. Every single one.